the show, and my one of my favorite poets, so many great Canadian hockey poets and poets. Well, this is from the Hockey Player Sonnet. It's called the Overtime Edition, and this is a poem that I think resonates right now. My politics and my hockey are both left wing, though I would not raise a gun for either, nor snipe from the safety of my lucky life. Bad men make such easy targets, shaping broken grammar with their mouths while they quarrel with a skate lace that sets porridged in an islet too snug for moving either way. Thus are their arguments locked and fisted in the tight, clean chambers of the mind. Let them arrive, armed and against gentleness. I will sit for hours rocking my blade against a board waiting to play. Yet I will not come mean for my man, though he catch me at my vespers like a Beckett priest or threaten my better army of words with 1,000 inarticulate silences.
Wow, very nice. Yes,
thinking about things in the world. Dale Ritterbusch is a great poet. I like John B. Lee, I know through SLA Sports. This is called Running at Midnight. I love it when a poem is about what it is and about something else in such a great way. With each stride, cinders crunch underfoot, and the only sound is of some night bird calling. With earth and air cooled late, I can run farther, faster, longer on this old school track, the last cinder track in the city. My mind focuses on the inner ring of the oval circumscribing the football field. I stay tight to the inside, remembering everything my high school coach taught me about running. I keep my hands loose, my arms pumped with a steady rhythm. Finishing a hard mile, my legs heavy, my mouth filled with cotton, I sprint around to the last turn, pour it on down the straight, and walk it off. A voice calls out, breaking the spell. Good night for a run. I search through the dark for that voice, find a young woman standing on her front lawn across the street. I try to catch my breath to tell her how much easier it is to run at night in August and how I do this almost every night in summer when the heat of the day, whatever I have to do, drains energy like an overloaded circuit. She walks across the narrow street while I put on my sweatpants under the goalposts. I listen as she talks about the quiet time of late summer, nights when she comes out to watch and listen to the stars. There is a note of longing in her voice, anticipation in the still air that tells me what she looks for. I draw further back into the shadows, back from the street lamp that might show her I'm too old to run like this, too old to tell her what she wants to hear, but it's only small talk, after all, something I've never been good at. I refrain from telling her the few things I know that I've learned circling the track, one run after another, night after night, season after season. She stands there between the goalposts and the cinders, her hands in her pockets, searching for words. I wish her well and jog back to whatever awaits, slowing perceptibly, leaving her beneath the circling summer stars, all of us learning to pace ourselves as best we can, searching, calling, running through our nights. Some of the answers swirl like insects around a street lamp. Some of them flare to ash in the light.
Wow, that is terrific. Who wrote that again?
Dale Ritterbusch is his name. He's a really, really great poet. Another one by John B. Lee from this also from Athlon, the Journal of the Sport Literature Association. I may have read this before, but I was thinking it fits well now. The sound of the puck on the boards on their honeymoon. My father took my mother to a standing room only Red Wings hockey game where they perched in the dark red hearted seats. He in his wingtips, she in her brand new stilettos, and she was Grace Kelly, beautiful, and he was handsome and slim, dapper with dark, thick, curly hair and the big car dreams of a farmer. And it was the winter of 1949, mild in January, when the weather strange, warm, snowless, and grass soft as it was with the ways of gentleness then, and the war was well over, with Howe on the ice, young and swift, while my mother suffered in silence for her tight shoes, her unnecessary girdle, her pinched smile, soon enough, for love she would learn to stop singing, to refrain from dance, to no longer expect to go to the movies, to work in the kitchen canning the apricot crop, to scald the jars and pluck the steam-feathered hens that lay headless and killed for the freezer, to wince at the ass from a teenage daughter, to puzzle sass from a teenage daughter, to puzzle over numerators with a son who understood the art of a good quarrel, to lose a baby girl only 3 hours old and to live long enough to be the eternally sad widow turning photographs to write the names on the back just in case someone should care. I was thinking of the woman in Ukraine, the pregnant woman that we saw who died. The baby was never even to be 3 hours old, and that made me think of that. We're going to go into a little bit happier situation now. This is a poem by Thomas Reynolds. It's called Final Season of the Six-Man Red Dogs or the Vanishing Hometown. I was reminded of so many more Maine schools have lost population and are playing eight-man football now, and how more and more schools are dropping certain sports because of enrollment and other reasons. And this is the story, Final Season of the Six-Man Red Dogs or the Vanishing Hometown, Thomas Reynolds. After tonight's blowout, trucks begin their awkward dance, ducking and faking in search of a hole, then sprinting for open road, left arms out into the wind as if to stiff arm the night. Even the surest, fleetest of mine might glance over shoulders to see what might be lurking on the edges of fields, having read our signs in the huddle and countered every move, every reverse in our thin, yellowing playbook. Outside town, trees already losing leaves loom like linebackers from the edge of the headlights, lean and ripped, long arms reaching to block us, to make us swerve, to lose resolve. We've been running this play for so many years now. Others carry the ball while our hands grip nothing but air. Above us, stars flicker, as if there's a faulty connection in the rafters, wiring gnawed by mice or fried by time. As we turn onto gravel roads, edging deeper into now whipping trees and bent grass, stars have much to teach us about fading away, with grace, with strength, still shining. How awful it must be to leave your school's last football game. And then by Richard Harrison, who's the hero of the play, is a complete collection of hockey stories. One of my favorite videos is of Manon Raume, who was the only woman to play in an NHL game. She was a goalie. Phil Esposito had her play when he was GM of the Tampa Bay Lightning. She's pretty good. Her son actually now plays for Quinnipiac. And then one after this, just for Rich. Here is the demise of Manon Raume. To stop the puck, come down from the stand, strap on the big pads, painted mask, disappear into goalie the way a man can be a man and not a man inside his armor. To forget in the motion of the save that we do not forget she is always a woman and sex is everything. If she wasn't pretty, she'd never hear her looks got her on the NHL team in Tampa Bay, where the ushers are women hired from a bar called Hooters. And David Letterman wouldn't have her on late night, prodding her again and again to say Aki if Brett Hull was ugly as a wet owl and scored 86 goals in a season. Still, there'd be kids with his poster on their bedroom doors. To be a woman and have it be her play that counts. To stop the puck where the best are men, for men to be better than they are. On your wall is a collage of women with their arms raised. They are dancing. They are lifting weights. They are marching against apartheid. One is a goddess with snakes in her hands. Catwoman reaches for Gotham. Bodicea shakes a spear in the face of Rome. Two nuns run splashing into the lashing waves. Here I give you Raume and a glove save. The puck heading for the top corner. Stopped.
Wow.
Yeah. Tremendous. If anybody has never seen David Letterman's, you can get it on YouTube. Interview with her. I had a lot of respect for David Letterman, but I was never really happy the way he handled that. I mean, if she hadn't been beautiful and he didn't find her saying Aki charming, I'm not sure that he would have had her on. The last poem for today is one that called Shea Stadium 1973 by Eric Jenkin, which I was reminded to read of something you were talking about the other day. Shea Stadium 1973, and then there's a quote from Federico Garcia Lorca, but it did have the vulnerable eternity of photographs. There was nothing more goddamn tragic than Mays as a Met. I hated the Giants, but he was beautiful then. My old man declares, moving the big sleep to his belly and glancing at the Dodgers. Saturday's ice melted in his bourbon. He reads mostly books dedicated to overthrowing the bourgeoisie. Dad's upper middle class status is worn like an unfitted wool coat tossed to the oak floor. Diabetes sews red angry legs to the couch. An oversized Hawaiian shirt makes a bloated belly. Got to shoot up now, he says, scratching his neck, the charade of a mock insulin addict. In my favorite picture, Mays is 42, no longer scratched newsreel announced by a transatlantic voice. Frames before, marooned and left, he dove in the alley, the tar-smeared ball nicking off the glove, stirrup legs and mid-limp. The Say Hey Kid wipes his dripping forehead, called in the Shea dusk. It was so sad to see him play for the Mets.
Yeah.
I certainly saw him play a lot as a Yankees fan, but you couldn't help but love Willie Mays.
Best player I've seen play. And again, I didn't really start seeing him until late in his career, you know, the mid to late 1960s. Can't imagine how good he must have been back in those early days when the Giants were in New York.
Yeah, I just remember my dad, who was a diehard Yankees fan, saying to me one time he said, I don't think there's anybody better than Mays. And you know, in New York at that time, you couldn't be a fan of, you were a fan of the Dodgers, the right. Giants, and the Yankees. You weren't a fan of both, or all three of them. But I also like the way poetry sometimes can take us back to look at sports in really tiny little pictures instead of the, you know, the who's the greatest of all time. Well, I know about that, but it's easier to maybe write a poem about the greatest moment you had at a ball game.
Mm.
You know, and that's what I think poetry is really good for. And we're switching gears next week.
Yeah, what's coming up next week?
We're going to be talking about Stephen Hardy's book, The Commissioner, which is a hockey mystery. I would encourage people to read this book who know anything at all about collegiate hockey in the last 30 years, because I think they're going to find a lot to say. Ooh, that's kind of like, ooh, is that? It's really well done. It's all with fictional characters, but you might be able to say that, gee, that guy looks a little bit like this guy or that guy who used to coach at this place or that place.
Yeah, we'll recognize some people, huh?
Oh, we will definitely recognize some people. let's say that if you follow ECAC and Hockey East, you'll recognize some people.
Excellent. Well, we're looking forward to that next week on SportsLit 101. We're 14 minutes away from the top of the hour here on a Wednesday afternoon program. Carry out today a planned day off out having a little time with his bride, enjoying the day today and a good day for it. He'll be back with us tomorrow, also on the program tomorrow. Fantasy baseball expert Al Melchior of The Athletic. A throwback Thursday conversation with actress Cindy Williams. Friday, Sean McAdam of Boston Sports Journal will join us from Red Sox spring training. And we'll talk with Ted Gibson and this Alan Adams guy from Penobscot Theater's production of Hockey Mom. That is all coming up later in the week here on Downtown. We'll take a break. It's Z62.